If they want to get you, they'll get you. The NSA specifically targets the communications of everyone. They're collecting your communications.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard to this week's edition of Thought Crime. Charlie Kirk is on his way, but with me now are currently our Blake Neff. What's up, Blake?
Howdy, Jack.
And Tyler Boyer. Tyler, who has, I wouldn't necessarily say shaved, but he at least shaved his mustache. So there's that.
Yeah, I haven't had a mustache for a while, but I got a haircut yesterday. So
yeah, you know, before we even do that's, the pleasantries.
That's a hair, you paid for that?
Yeah, I mean it's the cheap cut.
You know, that wasn't like
I've got children to feed.
That wasn't one of your kids doing that like in the okay. Yeah, no, that's cool. I'll just throw out real quick, just because it is breaking news. President Trump held a meeting at Mar-a-Lago on Sunday down there in Palm Beach with Elon Musk. We're gonna have more exclusive details on that very soon. We're going to wait for Charlie to get here. So Robinson once said that transgender women should be arrested for using the bathroom corresponding to their gender identity and suggesting that they should go outside instead. Amazing.
Hi, everybody.
Welcome, Charlie.
And Charlie's here.
Welcome to the program.
Charlie was going outside because of his gender identity.
So. Yeah. So interestingly enough, I was listening to MSNBC on the way in. I got stuck in terrible Phoenix traffic, and all they were talking about is the North Carolina governor's race. That was their whole lead. Robinson's going to have a tough race. He's going to have a tough race. They haven't elected a Republican governor in quite some time.
You were just going in that.
No, that's what I'm coming into. And they had Roy Cooper on MSNBC. They're going all in on that race. Mm-hmm. And by the way, they were... If I was Mark Robinson, I would sue MSNBC. They kept on saying Mark Robinson's a Holocaust denier.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding. They said Holocaust.
Wait, what?
No, go to Grabian. I watch MSNBC so you don't have to. Every day I listen to those maniacs. And they said Holocaust denier Mark Robinson. I kid you not.
Racism.
I was just reading the ABC hit piece against him, and that's not here. They've got a bunch of stuff, but that's not on this particular scattershot.
That was his intro on MSNBC tonight. So,
of course.
By the way, we haven't even started talking about Kyrsten Sinema not running in Arizona. Have we talked about that yet? We haven't even dove into Tyler. Have we talked about that? I don't know.
Well, about what? Which one?
Kyrsten Sinema.
Oh, we haven't talked.
Okay,
about it yet.
Okay.
No,
we will
cover not that. Not on here. No, not yet.
Okay, so we will get into that.
So we're
gonna find out a lot about tonight about in Minnesota, Blake. The uncommitted movement. Can you explain our audience about this? Minnesota is the next one. A lot of Arabs, a lot of Muslims, a lot of Muslim community there. What is this uncommitted movement?
All right. So obviously this all stems from the war in Gaza. Mm-hmm. Biden has stepped up pretty strongly in support of Israel and sending them money, sending them some weapons, sending them support. And that's really alienated the more left-wing part of the Democratic Party, the younger factions of the Democratic Party, and of course, this not large but substantive part of the Democratic Party that is Muslim now. And that's especially the case in, as you say, Michigan, Minnesota, a few other states. None of them have tons, but it's a few percent. It's enough that they can be heard. And so it started in Michigan. They had a effort to vote for none of the above, basically, in Michigan. I can't remember the exact wording they use, but basically don't vote for Biden, even though no one else is on the ballot. And they're doing the same thing now in Minnesota. And the goal is to send a message, hey, there are a lot of people on the left who oppose what the agenda is in terms of Gaza. Biden should be demanding a ceasefire. He should be putting more pressure on Israel to end the conflict. And they got about 14%, I believe, 13 or 14% in Michigan. I think if they could get a similar number in Minnesota, that would definitely get them sweating. The question, of course, is, will these people refuse to vote in the general election? Would any of them actually vote for Trump? I find that pretty unlikely. Or would they just line up and
vote? But it could be a taper off thing, right?
I mean,
it could have a tapering effect.
And it also just, when you're having this sort of problem, even... it creates a bad vibe around the entire campaign. Oh, everyone's attacking Biden. Everyone's mad at him. It creates this aura of failure around it. And that can be really devastating when you're the incumbent president and trying to rally people and get another term. And I think these things are very hard to measure. perhaps impossible, but they definitely affect the overall state of the election. That's going to affect, are we going to have all the volunteers we need? Are people going to put in that effort if they are tired on election day? Do I really want to go in and vote? And if the vibe around Biden is just bad and everyone's mad about this or that, he's not on a good track.
So Tyler, are we seeing currently more base enthusiasm for Donald Trump or for Joe Biden? That sounds like a simple question to answer, but given their ability to mobilize on the abortion issue, the ability to micro-target, who has the base advantage right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's obvious right now. The Democrats right now are micro-targeting like crazy to their base, and they've been doing this now since 2008. Since 2007, right? So, you know, when people, we have this conversation pretty frequently with people about the abortion issue. Why is abortion a bad issue for us? It's not because of the actual fight over abortion. We have, you know, arguably, I mean, look at polling in a lot of states, we have more pro-life people than there are pro-choice people. There's nothing wrong with standing on the pro-life issue. The reason why Democrats attack the pro-choice issue is because it's the number one issue with low propensity voters as a single issue vote, right? So people will look at that. And so when you talk about micro-targeting, when you're trying to micro-target into a community and get low propensity or less likely voters to vote, if you knock on the door and you have nothing else to talk about, what's the go-to for them? Abortion.
That's
so
right.
If you talk about abortion more often, it's going to be the easier go-to. Our side has walked away for some reason from the Second Amendment. Our side has walked away from
other micro-targeting issues.
Our issues, right? We have to look at the abortion issue and say, okay, what are going to be the single issue voter issues for us, and walk back towards those as the fallback, specifically with low propensity voters. And we have to look at the community of less likely or low propensity voters and say, what do they care most about at a 90% shtick? Well, again, when you talk about moms and dads, what do they care about?
Parents' rights.
Parents' rights. Don't trans my kids.
Property tax.
This is why this is so successful. When you look at the Virginia thing, it really had nothing to do with Glenn Youngkin, in my opinion.
No, that's true.
It had everything to do with that. That was our abortion issue.
So you think that we need to do a better job of creating low propensity pressure cooker issues that can win over low prop. And we unintentionally stumbled into it in Virginia. The trans issue became a triumphant over the abortion issue.
100%.
But that was before the repeal of Roe versus Wade. So is that rule still apply now post Roe?
It applies for everything, every election moving forward, especially when you're targeting nothing but low propensity voters, right? Which the left is doing. The left has said, Charlie is a high propensity independent voter. I'm not going to talk to him ever because the likelihood of me changing his mind is low because he's probably already made up his mind 6 months ago.
Yes, and the credit goes to Libs at TikTok, to Dr. Miriam Grossman,
totally,
to Matt Walsh, you know, a little bit to our program. When we talk about the emotionality, so abortion is a toughie for us because it involves something that you have,
yep,
or you think you have, being taken by an external force.
Yes.
Guns are similar.
Yes.
I have a firearm. I don't want someone taking it away from me. Now, yes, again, abortion is the quote-unquote ability to massacre a child, but that's how they look at it.
Medicare, Medicaid, same
but hold on. Let me throw a goofy one at you, Tyler. Zyn.
Yeah, totally.
So who does Zyn? Again, I don't know what the heck this is. It's a bunch of crap.
Can I tell you something?
Vox has an article about how Zyn's problem.
They reached out to us. Somebody reached out. They said, hey, can we talk to some Zyn swing voters? So what the heck are you talking about?
Can I tell you one of the biggest missteps that Donald Trump made ahead of the 2020 election?
He didn't chew?
No. There was this huge issue that was happening that's very similar on the Zyn front, which was that, remember, there was the vapes. There was a brand of vapes.
Yeah, did he ban it?
He banned the flavors of the vapes. They found workarounds, obviously, that the entire lobby found
but
workarounds.
But didn't that hurt the black vote in particular?
It hurt the youth vote for sure.
That's not a stereotype. There was an article about how there was, like, you know, people are rebelling against.
Well, they tried to. A lot of places were banning menthol flavored cigarettes.
Okay, but let's get to the Zyn. What is Zyn? I pretend I don't know.
Honestly, Someone else is gonna have to answer. Tyler, it's some sort of nicotine related thing.
What is Zyn, Tyler?
They're nicotine patches that you just stick in your lip.
They don't have tobacco.
But
it's basically what vape is to smoking, Zyn is to chewing tobacco.
So it's synthetic nicotine pouches.
Yeah.
So the Democrats, who are all about do whatever you want with your body, you can trans your kids, massacre them, put them on Lupron, hormonal practices. Mm-hmm. Now they're basically saying you could do all the weed you want, but we're gonna come after your Zyn. Who is the demographic of who uses Zyn? I think of like 24-year-old people that listen to Joe Rogan, white baseball players.
Young people, mostly men, right? Trending young men.
So how is this a... This is a winner for us, right? If you look at...
Famously, there's one famous, I guess you could call him, I don't know, right-wing or at least right-coded influencer-type host who is famous for, you know, promoting Zyn. Not promoting, but using Zyn. That's Tucker. Tucker's made
Of course.
Zyn kind of like a whole...
Yeah, he's like
gimmick on his show almost.
Yeah, he says you get like spiritual experiences from having Zyn, right, Blake?
Tucker spent, when I was around him at least, I think he spent more on nicotine than I spent on rent. He would do those lozenges. He was very strong. He's like, tobacco is bad, it gives you cancer, but nicotine has no side effects as far as I know, other than positive ones.
Let's go back.
Chewing tobacco does stimulate neurological benefits. I mean, Orwell said
yeah, but it also makes your jaw fall
because of
eventually.
The nicotine.
No, because of the tobacco. Because of the tobacco.
Nicotine does, it really, their studies have been shown, it's a stimulant that
allows
you to think clearer.
I know people who have intentionally addicted themselves to nicotine just because
Orwell.
They think it's...
Orwell smoked a pipe like literally all day and he died at age 48.
I know people
these
days who they just have, you know, those e-cigarettes or whatever, and there's fiends
Mayans had like a tobacco energy drink kind of thing that I think we should possibly try here on the... Well, it's not Thought Crime, but here on the Superstream audience, we should try to recreate that and remarket it.
Yeah, the Mayans also did other things we're not going to do. So, but let me understand, Tyler. So let's say Zyn. I know it sounds...
It's
goofy.
A mixed bag, Charlie, a mixed bag.
Yeah, the child sacrifice, well, I guess our society does that too. So, but Tyler...
Yes, we do.
Zyn, okay. So Chuck Schumer comes out, says, I want to take Zyn away. How can we use Zyn as a micro-target issue? Walk us through it. You're the Svengali of the Republican movement.
No. This is, again, I'll go back to the Juul situation. So when Juuls and vapes were banned, and meanwhile, you know, they're accessible all over the world and across the border and everything else and in massive quantity, you know, again, when you take something away from a voter and the messaging,
personal.
It becomes very personal, especially if it's a daily part of your life.
Medicare, Social Security. Guns, abortion.
It would be like taking away, it would be like taking away your favorite fast food. You know, you're doing something like shutting down. Like, people are not going to respond happily to that, right? And then the more people talk about it, and it becomes, it's easy to turn that into a dialogue too, right? And so we probably don't do this enough, quite frankly. I mean, think about how the Democrats are banning so many different things in cities.
Gas stoves, traditional vehicles.
We're never talking about this. We talk about it somewhat within the political circles, but it's not like massive conversations. We should be talking about that all the time. Gas vehicles, gas stoves, you know, banning food, certain foods that were like considered too fat for people and things like that. This is the same thing when you look at Juuls and vapes and Zyn, is that people, you know, should have rights in the states, and people, when you start taking things away, we need to be placing that squarely on the shoulders of the Democrats.
Yeah, and I just, the Democrats, I think, again, Zyn is a little bit silly, but it isn't. It's a strategic error because they currently have been benefiting from the they're trying to take stuff away from you type of issue.
Well,
right?
And think about this too. And again, I don't want to go totally rural and with men. You know, one of the things that we hear about all the time is like, we have to win the female vote back. Of course, we want to win the female vote, whatever. But I think we should lean and double and triple down into the male vote.
I think we can do 10 points better with the male vote.
We should triple down with the male vote and say, guess what's trying to happen? Guess what's happening to you in your community right now? They're trying to take away your gas-powered vehicle.
I don't know if anyone that has a testosterone rate over 500 or 600 could vote Democrat. I just don't. I just don't know who these people are. I mean, if you have any sort of self-determination or awareness or grit or resolve or, I don't know, disagreeable attitude, who likes what's going on here?
It's a very serious thing. Like, then this is why the dude numbers are skyrocketing, because people are going, wait, 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 wait. And this is the other, the counter argument, actually, it's like really deep. That's almost just like built into the DNA of every human being that is an American on the abortion issue. Every time that they're talking about giving females more control over making determinations with the future of, you know, again, families and planning, that actually is attacking males in a specific way too. We've talked about that at length and so on. So that's actually, we haven't gotten deeply enough into taking away fathers' rights. We haven't talked about getting into the male rights within America. And
take away your red meat, right? Blake, I mean, you grew up in the Heartland. There is a crusade on red meat. Again, they're not necessarily talking about restricting it policy-wise yet, but
totally.
I mean, they're talking about how it's a pollutant. It's bad for your heart health. By the way, there's no evidence of that at all.
No.
That red meat is bad for your heart. Like, none. It's all made up. But, Blake.
I don't know if that's driving people's votes just
no,
yet.
No, but why,
I don't
why
think
shouldn't
it's,
it, though?
But I we mean, should talk about it now.
But the, yeah, sure. The point is that the Democrats at the core are the party of the taking.
It
and they
is,
try to frame us as
they're the party
to,
of taking.
They're the party of just meat.
Yeah, and
synthetic.
Just
meat.
Yeah, it's. Synthetic. I think one of the most strongest things here is just. Oh man, I sound like one of those weirdy arts guys, but like the vibe shift of the parties and the Zin thing. I don't know how many people really do it, but the attacks on it and certain other things the left is obsessed with pushing is the left has become this. Dolores Umbridge party. They've become the party of that Colorado.
Tell people what that means.
Dolores Umbridge is a Harry Potter character.
Yes,
I should
know
who that is, but I do.
I do.
And
Blake, I just had an entire conversation about this yesterday. You're 100% right.
Wasn't she the one of the teachers?
Yeah, so she was she's the villain of the fifth book and is total school marm, lecturer, government bureaucrat par excellence. And very much like that Colorado Secretary of State we saw the other day with those horrifying doll's eyes gazing into your soul, telling you that you need to fill out your paperwork and not be the insurrectionist and not be on the ballot. And this is Democrats have become this type of person. And the truth is for 100 years, really, mm-hmm. the right was considered that type of person. You could call it the church lady stereotype. The sort of person who's prying into your business, making sure you're not doing a bad thing, not thinking the wrong thoughts. And this was a stereotype of someone who was conservative, fairly or not.
We have 45 seconds before we welcome Rav. So, yes.
Well, before we get into that, this is how this is going to be at the doorstep of females. So I actually heard about this week, was talking about menstrual cups versus tampons. The environmentalists, this is very real for women. They're going to have disposable diapers taken away. I mean, that's the next step down the road. And women need to be thinking about this as much
for
as
kids?
Men do. What's that?
The kids' disposable diapers, you mean?
Yeah. I mean, the environmentalism is crazy. Everything that they want to take away from this isn't just impacting men. We're talking about impacting the everyday usage stuff that makes life easy. That is not only impacts men, but impacts women too. They're just not thinking about it yet.
We're getting your questions live here. We want to do a live straw poll with you. Who do you want Donald Trump to choose as his vice president? We're going to have the results and tally them up. And freedom@charliekirk.com. Jack, please continue.
Look, this is where, and we haven't talked about it a lot yet, but maybe it's a good time to get into it, because this is where you've seen Trump start to make moves now to pick up non-traditional Trump voters. This is where this meeting with Elon Musk that just came out as these results were breaking tonight, I think plays a huge role, because Elon Musk, his takeover of X, which I'm sure, by the way, came up in any discussion that those guys were having. I'm sure we know that Elon wants Trump to come back very, very much. I'm not saying his support would be contingent on something like that. It just, you know, it's like Trump built the place and then walked away. Then Elon came up and bought it. And there's a very Shakespearean dynamic to the whole endeavor. But going to the politics of it, Elon speaks to a base of people that are your Zin voters, your Zinfluencers, your Joe Rogan voters, your Barstool guys. He speaks to people that are kind of in sort of more the tech bro coded world, the futurists. These people are inherently by and large college degree holders, and it represents a way for Trump to reach them in a way that he wouldn't necessarily be able to just going through traditional conservative media. And I say that, of course, as a guy who's a noted denizen of said conservative media.
I want to tell you guys the top two vote getters for the vice president. Who do you think won the vice presidential poll, just based on our amazing audience?
Oh, man.
Tucker Carlson.
No.
Carrie Lake?
Number two, Vivek. Byron. Number one,
Vivek
Ramaswamy.
Vivek.
Yeah. By the way, we're going to keep it. That's just as of right now. So if you guys want to
I've been at events with Vivek over the last couple of months. I mean, people are really, really warming up to him. It's just true.
Yeah, and Vivek is amazing. Vivek is going to come out all the way to California and speak at our investor conference that we're doing, Tyler, for our top donors. He's nice enough to fly all the way across the country for that. He's a total patriot. Really, really great guy. And I think very highly of Vivek. So if you guys want to contribute to the vice presidential poll, email us freedom@charliekirk.com. I want to get Tyler now to riff. It is a perfect period of time. Kyrsten Sinema, no labels. Tyler, walk us through it all.
So Kyrsten Sinema delivered what sounded like a gubernatorial election speech today, which was all focused on Arizona. She announced that she was no longer considering running for Senate. This has been speculated for the last number of weeks, really last couple of months, because she hadn't announced that she was going to run, and you need a significant amount of signatures to make the ballot in Arizona for U.S. Senate. And so she hadn't been doing that. And so there's basically 1 month left. There was this last week. It was 1 month left to collect signatures, and she hadn't announced. And so everyone was speculating, like, how hard is it going to be for her to collect? And that would be really embarrassing for her not to make the ballot and decide to run. And so a lot of people had come to the conclusion she wasn't going to run. This was a couple of weeks ago. But the question, big question is what is she doing then? Is she going to try to make a presidential run? Is she going to try to, get some kind of high paid lobbying gig? Is she going to try to do something else? And her speech today, to me, if you listen to her speech that she gave and she posted, so she posted on Super Tuesday, which a lot of people speculated again that was strategic, that she didn't want to make massive news, that she wasn't trying to rock the boat. She was trying to just slip in, and catch the early cycle before all the results came in. And she basically gave a speech that talked about how moderate she is and how good she's been to Arizonans.
So you think she might run for governor of Arizona? Is that right?
If all I had to go off of was basically today alone, for the most part, I would suspect that there seems to be an undercurrent. We're not stupid. There's an undercurrent that clearly is trying to get her to consider to run for governor, because the Chamber of Commerce, who's been best buddies with Kyrsten Sinema, the state Chamber of Commerce, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, who's been really close with Kyrsten Sinema, is looking at Kyrsten Sinema and going, she would be much better than Katie Hobbs, and we don't like anyone that's pro-Trump, and Arizona is probably going to produce a pro-Trump Republican as their nominee for governor. And so why not try to encourage Kyrsten Sinema to run for governor?
So let me ask you then, and we love Carrie Lake, we've endorsed Carrie Lake, but I need to ask the tough question. Does Kyrsten Sinema not running in the Senate race help Carrie Lake or hurt Carrie Lake?
It would be foolish to say that it helps Carrie Lake, because Kyrsten...
Do you think Carrie would agree with that?
Look, I mean, here's the point that I'll make, which is, it's better for voters if they have a clear difference between candidates. Kyrsten Sinema, what she was doing was muddying the waters and winning votes for people that really don't really care or know what's going on, or didn't want to vote on any issues because they viewed her as like the alternate candidate. And this is the RFK problem for Democrats. More Democrats will end up voting for that type of a person than Republicans today. That's just a fact, right? That's just like, we're seeing that come to fruition. So Kyrsten being out of the race, it's good and it's bad. It's bad because probably more Democrats are going to defect from a bad candidate like Ruben Gallego, like Joe Biden, and vote for that person, like an RFK or a Kyrsten Sinema or an alternative candidate. The good news is that we have a clear opportunity now to paint a picture in Arizona for, here is what Republicans stand for, here's what Democrats stand for.
No muddle, choose. No muddy independent stuff.
And honestly, Charlie, it's kind of like when you look at a football game and people are like, should we kick the extra point and go into overtime, the second overtime?
Or go for the win.
Or go for the win.
Go for two and go for the win.
It's kind of one of those moments where it's like, go for the win, right? Go for the win.
You go for two, end it, right?
And some people, you flub it.
Kansas State flubbed it against University of Texas this year, and they went for two, and they lost the game.
And everyone looks at you and goes, you're an idiot for that. But when
all
you,
the time.
But when you win...
You're the hero.
You're the hero.
Like LSU, Alabama. Get that clip. Let me think about it. Jaden Daniels, former Sun Devil, last year against number one or number two Alabama, went for the win, and they got it. They went for two. You can get that clip last year. One of the best college football games last year. So let me ask one more question. I'm kind of grilling you here, Tyler. If No Labels becomes a thing involving cinema in some capacity, who would she be running with? And does that help or hurt Donald Trump?
The problem for No Labels is they're not in every state. So having a...
Because they haven't collected signatures?
Yeah, having a viable... And at this point, if you don't have a ticket to go out and get the it's different every state to get on the presidential ballot. If you haven't done the required work to do that, you're not going to get on. And so you don't have a viable pathway forward. Now, the question is No Labels not a real thing and just trying to sink the Republican ship, Donald Trump ship, whatever? And the No Labels people will tell you, no, that's not the point. And the Democrats have tried to can No Labels because they're afraid that No Labels will actually take more votes away from them. So I don't think that I think at this point, we would have seen the strategy, the No Label strategy already play out if this was a nationwide thing.
So you don't think it's going to be drafted. You might wait. So, but hold on. If it's just targeted,
could it get hijacked by?
Hold on. If they target, let's say Romney runs. Yeah. And they go Idaho, Utah, Arizona, the three most populous LDS states, and Nevada. That's a splinter campaign.
Right, but they would have to hijack the national nomination.
So it doesn't take an MSNBC very long to call everybody a bunch of racists. Joy Reid, Republican voters don't base on economics, vote based on economics. They're voting based on race. Play cut 43.
But Republican voters don't vote that way. They don't vote based on economics or based on the benefits they're getting economically from the president. They're increasingly, from the Tea Party on, they're voting on race. They're voting on this idea of an invasion of brown people over the border. The idea that they can't get whatever job they want. A black person got it. Therefore, drive all the blacks out of the colleges. Get rid of DEI. That is what they're voting on. They're just voting specifically on racial animus. Which, at this stage, it isn't about economics.
No.
What's amazing is she doesn't, I mean, it's not amazing, but Blake, she doesn't cite this at all. She makes this wide sweeping generalization with no evidence, no data. It's just kind of this gut, awful, tribal, racist feeling.
It's just the same thing they've been doing since 2016. This is a white lash. They're hitting the same button over and over again. And you can sense this shrill meltdown some of them are having that the button isn't quite working as well as it used to. It seemed to be working really well in 2020. And it's like they fried it. The stuff, their old tactics are not working nearly as much anymore. And it's causing quite a few of them to go berserk. And I think we'll see a lot of that really unhinged state they got into in 2020 come back. And I think a promising thing is I think that will turn off a lot more people than it used to.
Let's go to some of the exit polls here. Let's go to this. Let's go to cut 45. CBS talks to black voters as polls show that support for President Biden among black voters has gone down. I'm going to have a nice dialogue with Blake on this. Blake is very black-pilled on the black voter issue. Play cut 45.
Why did you vote for President Biden in the last
because
election?
Because of who he ran with, and he was in the White House for the 8 previous years. I felt like he had the experience. But definitively, right now, I couldn't tell you that if they open the polls tomorrow, I'm voting for Joe Biden.
So what changed?
Life. The inflation and the things that we're going through right now. I want the right person so that I'm not paying $8 for eggs, $15 for gas.
Even though things may be improving economically, you feel there's a disconnect.
Yeah, there is a disconnect.
So how are they proving economically if you don't do massive SPAC deals? All right, Blake, you've said that this is kind of a twitch on the right?
Yes.
Okay.
It's the right... for understandable reasons, but the right is very obsessed with winning the black vote, and we should probably win all votes because it's good to win votes.
Do you think that Trump is probably doing better with this community?
I think Trump will possibly do better with this group in this election cycle
than he did in 2016.
That's big.
Or 2020. That would be good. I think he's going to do better with that. I don't know. I think it's difficult to measure. I think it's worth remembering that black voters are the ones who made Joe Biden the nominee. Joe Biden has done a lot to entrench black voters' role within the Democratic Party. He made South Carolina their first primary
state.
And they basically are the Democrats in that state. So he went and said, black voters get the first crack at voting on the Democrat nominee. He's made a lot of black political operatives in the Democratic Party very powerful within the Democrats. You know, we were talking earlier today about the Rules Committee of the DNC. Mm-hmm. He's put a lot of black Democrats on that committee. So I think it's easy for Republicans to miss this because understandably we don't really track internal Democrat Party drama, but he's done a lot to build up that faction of the party. It's definitely possible that a lot of them are going to look and say, oh, wait, open borders is terrible. Joe Biden has low energy, has all this bad stuff. There is a certain magnetism to Trump that seems to override everything else that people are supposed to vote based on. But what I would just say is the Republican Party has a cyclical habit of bluntly fixating on the black vote. And I don't think we should do that because we are supposed to be the party that does not obsess about race. And here's a blunt fact. There are more Hispanic voters in the United States than there are black voters. For that matter, there are more white voters in the United States than there are black voters.
No, but of course, but I think that we can say that when you're underperforming a group by 90%+, and that group is in a battleground state like Georgia, it doesn't hurt to try to do 5 points.
Certainly it doesn't, but they are a group that swings less, whereas, for example, white voters, especially working class white voters, swing more.
20 or 30.
They're bigger swingers, if you want to put it that way.
Okay, they're not swingers.
Well, but so
come on,
they are more swingy in the sense that look at Iowa. Iowa's a great example of this. Iowa is a state that went for Obama pretty easily, and now it's going to Trump pretty easily. New Hampshire whips back and forth. Sort of moderate white voters are the ones who are swingy. They are the ones who can be won by one party or the other based on what's going on. And importantly, why did Trump lose in 2020? He actually did do better with black voters and with Hispanic voters, but he lost because he lost a lot of the white vote.
We use the word thwarted from power, not lost.
Thwarted from whatever. Pick the words you want, but I would never say don't campaign for the black vote. We should try to get every vote we can. We should try to get the Asian votes. They're pretty numerous too. But what I would say is it's a tick you notice where the Republicans sort of concede ground to the Democrats that these are the most important votes and that Republicans don't have legitimacy as a political party if they're not winning these votes. And that's not a position we should embrace.
No, I don't think that's right. But so some of the polling shows, New York Times polling, a 20-point swing with black voters. If that is half true, Trump is president.
Definitely.
Okay, you agree with that.
If that happens, yes. But what I would say is I've been around these elections for a while. That makes me sound ancient. I've seen several elections, and every single one of them, except 2008, no one thought Biden was or Obama was getting less than 97% of the black vote that election. But every single time, I will see the narrative that this is the time there's this poll or that story. This is the time Republicans are breaking through, and they're going to get 25% or 30%. Of the black vote. So, and the reason you have to be careful is they will throw a lot of resources at this. They will throw a lot of emphasis on this, and then it doesn't pan out. And so as a matter of political strategy.
But if you're talking about Georgia, you win 50,000 black voters, it's done.
50,000
new, right, Tyler? 50,000 new black patriots. It's over.
It makes it very difficult for the Democrats to win Georgia.
Or North Carolina or Wisconsin. Wisconsin has a ton of black voters.
Well, I think there's a different type of black issue based voter in Wisconsin than Georgia.
Okay,
I don't know what
the big difference would be.
Well, I think there is probably a slightly more
Midwestern wrinkle.
I think there's a slightly more active churchgoer that's in Georgia.
Oh yeah, more religious.
More religious black
voter. So is it more working class in Wisconsin?
Which again, that number will still probably go up, but I would expect that possibly you see the religious vote go, you know, significantly up. But again, this is where it's like maybe that's why the Democrats are going to abandon Georgia a little bit more, right? Maybe that's why they're going to abandon Arizona, is that you see the Hispanic votes, you know, going up 10 points for Trump. The bigger issue for us is how are they trying to make up those votes? So in the same argument that we were making about losing college educated, middle class white people, you know, and for Republicans, they're looking at this and going, oh, they're already two steps ahead of us, going, we're already expecting to lose X amount of the minority communities. And by the way, many of those votes only turned out because we chased them. Yeah. So all we have to do is not chase those people and that are going to potentially vote against us and focus on the other pockets that are going to vote for us, which in this case, again, is middle class, college educated white women. Right. And so that's where the Democrats are shifting. And that's why they're so far ahead of us, is because they can isolate those pockets, message micro target to those pockets and say we can make up 20 or 30 or 40,000 votes here or there in different parts of the state.
I want to get Jack in on this. Jack, your thoughts on the emphasis on black voters. I don't agree with Blake. I don't think it's a pathological fixation. In fact, I don't think it gets nearly the resources that it warrants or it deserves. Is it a fool's errand, Jack?
So there's different, you know, there's different ways to look at this as well, because in the sense that, you know, I get the aggregate question about, are you going to get enough voters over marginally of a group that is less than 20% of the country in order to swing any of the key states that we need? So the states that we need, we're going to be talking about, of course, the Rust Belt. So Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, those are the swing states in the Rust Belt. Then in the Sun Belt, you have Georgia and Arizona. Georgia, of course, is a state with about, we just got the data here in the chat here. So 33, 34% black population currently. And so that's a state at least where you could really see some dig in. Of course, Georgia, a lot of people remember this, the state that supposedly gave Biden the presidency and certainly the nomination. And so what I would also point out, though, is that in the very same way that we were just talking about how people in the Midwest have adopted, you know, through, and I think the jury's still out on where exactly it comes from, but from this Midwest Nice perspective, there's just generally a sense that people want to see a candidate that is campaigning for all votes. Americans want to see, and certainly the American moderate and certainly the American independent want to see a candidate that's not cutting off demographic groups. Now, we can argue over whether or not too much time is spent on one thing or another, but you do want to see a candidate, and this will help with white voters, it'll help with Hispanic voters, it'll help with Muslim voters, it'll help with voters across the board. If you do have a candidate who seems like he's genuinely attempting to achieve all of those, the support of all those groups.
Okay, let's go here. Okay, MSNBC panel mocks the fact that immigration is a top issue for voters across the country, including in Virginia. They laugh. They laugh at the death of Lake and Riley. They laugh at illegals storming into the country, breaking into homes, raping innocent people. They laugh at it. Play cut 46.
I mean, if you look at some of these exit polls, I mean, I live in Virginia. Immigration was the number one issue. Yeah. Again, these could change in Virginia.
Well, Virginia does have a border with West Virginia. Very, very contested area.
Build a wall. Like, what?
Laughing at immigration being the top issue. Tyler.
Oh, they gave Nikki Haley four delegates already. Oh.
They now have four. She has four delegates.
She won four delegates.
It's over. This is a failure.
Can you imagine having to be one of the people who has to commit your vote to Nikki Haley at the convention?
You have to go to the convention? Could you imagine? Like, they're going to be harassed.
They'd be like, you get like picked on, like the, like, what's his face in The Simpsons? Like,
yeah, they're gonna be like, you're a Nikki Haley delegate. This is, I found
should
one.
Make them wear hats.
Yeah, exactly.
Make them wear
the big cone, big dunce hat. But, we found you.
But to your point, Charlie, I mean, we're in a time that this is what Republicans have been saying for a long time in some of their border states. Not many years ago was a law passed called SB 1070 in Arizona, which basically gave the police the ability to aid and assist ICE. Mm-hmm. And that was really a popular thing. And it still is today in Arizona, because, you know, you have victims of violent crimes happening not just in Arizona now, but all over the country where we're seeing infiltration, and Democrats are getting very uncomfortable, even in big cities where they're seeing just large drop-offs of military-aged men, individuals who have committed crimes. I mean, look, if I was an enemy of America, I wouldn't be sending my best and brightest to my enemy. I wouldn't be allowing that. And you have to expect the opposite is true too, which is that they're going to encourage and incentivize the worst people ever to flow across the border. And that's part of what you're seeing. It's not everything, but it's a big part of what you're seeing. And as a person in Arizona, my family has had very close people within our family as victims of violent crime. And I won't go into details about it because it's private to my family, but it impacted my family for a long time. And it wasn't just one or two people it impacted rings of people. And this is the same thing that goes for a lot of people are looking at this and they're going, we just had a report in Arizona come out today that we lost a lot of local farmers, and local farming's down, and big monopolized farming is increasing. And part of this is because, you know, it's a difficult place to do business along the border states, to grow crops, to manage things, to manage a business, whether it's, we think of the stores and the burning that happened in Minnesota with everything, with, you know, the Summer of Love. When you have infiltration of your cities, of your state, it becomes more difficult and more, more risky for you to enter into business and keep your business in that state. And I think people are buckling down on the immigration issue and saying, I'm not going to own a bunch of land and subject my family and my farming to what's happening flowing across the border, especially in southern Arizona and southern Texas.
And it's met with mockery. It's met with mockery on MSNBC if you believe that it is the top issue. Let's play some more pieces of tape here. They're mocking the Texas thing. Let's talk about Texas here because we'll have a nice little dialogue. Is it a good? I think it's a great idea to go after Dade Phelan, all of this. They think that Texas is no longer going to be red because of it. Blake will probably agree. Play cut 42.
Blue, a sine wave,
yeah,
and then coming down the other side to Texas will never be blue. But the
you
part
could
of it
just switch to Texas used to be blue.
Texas used to be blue.
Which will always
Texas,
be true.
Texas will always be true. Texas could be blue again.
I think the Republicans are. I think it could take a minute, but the Republicans there hate each other so much.
Yes.
That it usually isn't the rise of another party. It's the weakening of the dominant party. And I think nothing weakens a party like a civil war.
Yeah.
Can you talk, Chris, a little bit about what's going on right now with the Texas down ballot stuff?
Yeah, I mean, the Texas State House basically is a three-party operation. It's the Democratic Party and then the Republican Party is in two factions, which is basically the good old boys and the crazies. And basically the way the state works...
They're both
is that
a little crazy.
Yeah, I mean, look, the good old boys are hardcore right-wing, like ideologically, right? But there's a sort of this kind of MAGA contingent that was even... there before MAGA became MAGA and has always been this sort of process where they have super majorities, but basically these contingents. And right now, those two factions are in the most open war with each other they've ever been for a bunch of reasons, but largely because the Attorney General Ken Paxton was impeached by the Texas House and then acquitted by the Texas Senate. Now, after being acquitted, he and his allies are out for revenge. They are raining down holy hell.
Man, they're having a fun time tonight.
Yeah, we have some updates there on the Texas
race.
Yeah,
tell us.
They're like, to your point, Charlie, the runoff rules in Texas exist. So if you don't get 50%, then it is going to a runoff.
Yeah, all these preemptive people putting on social media, Dade Phelan's been defeated. There's no evidence
of
that yet.
There was early that it looked like it was over 50%, but now we're seeing some of these late votes coming in, and we don't have a good idea of what percentage has been counted, but it does look like a number of insurgent candidates that are on the Paxton side of that war have won or are winning. They are getting over 50% very clearly. And then there's a bunch of drag out races that have some of them have four or five candidates in them where it's under 50%. And because of that, this thing is going to go to a runoff. We brought up Katrina Pearson. She is now neck and neck with the person, but there's a third candidate in the race. So she's probably going to end up going to a runoff. You have the Dade Phelan race. So he's like there. That one's likely going to a runoff unless there's more votes to be counted that we're not aware of. And that had a third person in the race, Alicia Davis. So the one thing I'll point out, and this is good to pay attention to, is a lot of conservatives will get excited tonight going, yeah, we made it through the runoff, or yeah, we're showing them. But it's very likely, or there could be a real possibility that the person that's the third person or fourth person that's in this race were recruited by the establishment with the intent to try to split the vote for the insurgent because they know how unpopular they are. And this is a common tactic that's used by the establishment. And there's a lot of Bush money that's floating around Texas. So I wouldn't put it past them. I don't know these candidates. I'm not intimately involved with any of these races. So that may not be true for every one of these races, but I wouldn't be surprised if that is the case in some of these, which means that the conservatives are going to have to work really, really hard in the runoff to beat Dade Phelan, to beat other people, to make sure all their votes turn back out, because it's a weird runoff election date, and that the third party candidate isn't there just to play spoiler to them.
This is one of the advertisements that was being run against Mark Robinson. Rachel Maddow breaks down all this crap. Again, I'm telling you, they have to sue MSNBC for what they're saying here. Play cut 51.
When you have to say the Holocaust was real and Hitler was evil, both, in a primary ad, you know that this is not a normal primary year, but Mark Robinson is not a normal primary winner. He will be the Republican nominee for governor in North Carolina. He has, in fact, called the Holocaust hogwash. He says Beyonce is satanic. He says the moon landing in 1969 may have been fake. He says the civil rights movement in the 1960s was, quote, crap, and that Martin Luther King was a communist. He also says there is a secret ruling cabal that is part reptile, meaning part human, part reptile.
I don't know. Have you seen some of these people? They look pretty reptilian to me.
Mark Robinson on Thought Crime when?
I think we have to go through each of these one at a time.
Yes. Yeah, so
because there's some things that there, if he did say them.
So the reptile thing, totally real. So no, I'm kidding.
By the way, I looked up his quote about the main one.
I'm telling
where
you,
they said that he called the Holocaust hogwash, and it's just not true. That's not what he said
I'm telling you, get the whole clip, guys, on Gravian. They call him a Holocaust denier on MSNBC. We got to tweet that out. We have to get the drum. This will help Mark Robinson, by the way. Get this out there right now, and it gets the high ground for Mark Robinson. Tyler, Blake, and Jack, thank you guys so much. We also had some great thought crime conversation within it as well. So it was time well spent. God bless you guys, and see you tomorrow.
Thought crime is death.